speed is how we won this race. We were faster than everybody else.
Dallas Seavey is claiming victory on the final stretch to Nome. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, March 13th. Good evening. I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, another committee takes up the oil tax debate.
The number of companies filing annual tax returns doubled between 2006 and 2009.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health, and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
Dallas Seavey is on the final stretch to Nome. The Willow Musher is likely to capture his first Iditarod win tonight. If he does, he will be the youngest winner in Iditarod history. He turned 25 while out on the trail. Behind Seavey, Allie Zirkel and Ramey Smith are battling for second place. Right now, GPS shows Zirkel about 7 miles ahead of Smith. APRN trail reporter Ann Hillman is in Nome waiting for the leaders. Hi, Ann.
Hi.
So, Ann, what are you hearing about the final section of the trail?
When people talk about it, they say that it's getting pretty windy out there, and the wind is really very biting cold, which makes it harder for anyone to make a really good run from safety into Nome. So they're expecting some Dallas to get here maybe between 6 and 7. And it's not going to be a fast trail, but he'll make it.
What are the preparations like in Nome right now?
Kind of what you would expect. There's a lot of tourists milling about, making sure that they get their picture taken with anything that says Nome on it. They're prepping the area for the dogs to come running in, so they're filling the street with snow so they have something to run on. There's the big setup and the big banner and the arch, and they've cordoned off areas where the media can go, and nobody's allowed to step past that into the chute or by pain of death, almost, it seems. And, you know, people are kind of wandering around, and they're talking about who they know will win, who they want to win. I think the real excitement's really going to get going, though, probably about 6 o'clock.
And what are you hearing from people? Who do they want to win?
Well, the general consensus is that everyone knows Dallas is going to win, and that's pretty exciting because he's the youngest, and he's been making a pretty good run. It's funny, though, a lot of people, even though they know Dallas is coming in, really want Allie. They're all excited. They're like, oh, wouldn't it be great to have another woman to win? Wouldn't it be great to have Allie win just because she's just a nice person and it'd be good for the sport? So Allie's got a massive number of supporters, even though it looks like she's either going to come in second or third.
You had a chance to talk with Dallas Seavey's brother, Danny. What did he have to say?
He had to say that Dallas has known he was going to win for months and months now. His wife has been home taking care of their 18-month-old, and she hasn't been going to family events, and she didn't go to the Yukon Quest. But months ago, she bought tickets to make it to Nome because they just knew he was going to come in first. So I don't know how they had the premonition, but I guess it looks like they're going to be right.
Well, thanks, Anne. We'll look forward to updates for tomorrow.
Thanks.
Anne Hillman is in Nome covering the Iditarod finish for APRN. Dallas Seavey followed a careful strategy during this year's Iditarod. Early on in the race, he hung back, letting other mushers lead the way. In White Mountain this morning, he told Anchorage Daily News reporter Kyle Hopkins that he was building the monster early on. He said, you don't start racing a 1,000-mile race on the first day.
You know, I felt like I was in control of this race as far back as Ruby and possibly even Cripple, but we didn't even make a move until we were on our way to Unalakleet. You got to just hold back. This is a long race. There's no reason to get all excited and antsy and, you know, head off to the front of the race and immediately have a bunch of problems and a tired dog team that's slowing down. Speed is how we won this race. We were faster than everybody else, and that's that's what we had to build. We had to build that speed and then keep it, not spin it up to try to get to, like my dad blasting off first to the halfway. Yeah, you got the gold all right. But again, I want the truck.
That was Dallas Seavey talking with Anchorage Daily News reporter Kyle Hopkins in White Mountain this morning. You can find more of their coverage at ADN.com. The Senate Finance Committee today opened its hearings on a bill setting up a new oil tax regime. The bill comes as a small but new response to the House's version of tax cuts that passed last year. APRN's Dave Donaldson reports.
The Senate Resources Committee took 3 weeks to put together its version of an oil tax bill, and in explaining and justifying the decisions that went into that plan, Fairbanks Democrat Joe Pascvan summarized the notes, studies, and reports he had assembled on a very complex issue.
One of the many comments that I have heard is, you know, why can't we just poke another hole in the ground and get more well? And if it was only so simple.
The tax rewrite is prompted by Governor Parnell's push to increase the amount of oil produced for the Trans-Alaska pipeline. That's been in decline for many years. Pascvan presented a 2011 report from the Department of Revenue that indicates the future is not necessarily that bad. He said the report shows that since the Murkowski PPT tax regime and the Palin ACES tax regime went into effect, the industry has actually increased capital investment and exploration for new oil, even while production has declined.
The number of companies filing annual tax returns doubled between 2006 and 2009. And the reason why I believe the Department of Revenue Commissioner identified that is in relationship to the passes of either the PPT or the ACES that it seems to have attracted new operators or new entrants into the Central North Slope region of the state of Alaska.
The Finance Committee is not solidly behind the resources bill. Anchorage Republican Liesl McGuire is a member of both committees and opposed the measure that left the Resources Committee. And while Pascvan presented an 86-page summary of committee documents, McGuire challenged it as only presenting one side of the issue.
This is a dialogue, and this committee is built on that foundation, and this is one member of the Senate's perspective, and he's laying his foundation for that perspective. But others of us may choose to use different charts, different graphs, and different information, even from exact websites.
The committee set aside every morning for the next 2 weeks, at least, to study and take action on the bill. I'm Dave Donaldson in Juneau.
A heli-skiing guide is dead after an avalanche struck a party of six skiers outside of Haines today. The avalanche was reported shortly after 11 a.m. as rescuers were in the process of locating two missing skiers caught in the snow. The other skier who was caught, a guided client, is clinging to life. From member station KHNS, Tara Bicknell reports.
The avalanche happened at a backcountry ski area northwest of Haines that skiers access by helicopter. One of the two men who were buried about 7 feet under the fallen snow was skiing as a client with one of the area's heli-ski companies. The other was skiing as a guide. Alaska State Trooper Josh Bentz says names are not being released until next of kin is notified, but the victims are both from the lower 48.
Two people were receiving CPR. And they were able to get them out of the snow and transport it back to one was transported back to 33 Mile, the other was transported to the Haines Clinic. And we have one confirmed fatality, and the other is not confirmed.
The avalanche occurred on Taquin Ridge, about 20 air miles northwest of Haines, and near a helipad used by skiers at mile 33 on the Haines Highway. The remaining ski party located the two missing men using avalanche beacon equipment. Other organizations, including the Heli-Ski Company, skiers in the area, local fire departments, troopers, and state parks, helped transport the two men by helicopter to higher care.
One patient was transported to Haines via helicopter. The other one was transported via helicopter to 33 Mile Roadhouse, where he was transported by ambulance to the Haines Clinic.
The surviving victim is being transported to Seattle. No other injuries were reported in the accident, and all skiers are accounted for. In Haines, I'm Tara Bicknell.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, graduating from Village Public Safety Officer training.
Jumping into the ocean for the cold water survival, that was one tough job to do.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. And by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline for over 30 years.
Whether visiting Barrow or attending business in Juneau, APRN goes with listeners wherever they roam. Your company's message can span across Alaska on 26 stations. Find out how by calling 907-550-8437.
The Alaska Supreme Court heard arguments today in a challenge to districts outlined by the Alaska Redistricting Board last year. Attorneys for the Redistricting Board are appealing part of a lower court judge's ruling that rejected the lines for districts 1, 2, 37, and 38. Arguments today centered on Alaska Native voting rights in light of the Federal Voting Rights Act and implications to the Alaska Constitution. Attorneys Mike Wallery represented plaintiffs from Esther and Goldstream, who are fighting being included in a Yukon River district.
Our view, frankly, is, and this is, and if I can speak on behalf of the intent of my clients believe that District 38 is not an effective district because of those high voter turnout levels, particularly in the primary in Esther Goldstream. And they find it very offensive to be used, because they do support Native rights, they find it very offensive that they are being used to marginalize and suppress Native voting.
Michael White, arguing for the State Redistricting Board, said the board's charge to ensure proportional voter representation was difficult in light of Alaska Native migration to urban areas in recent years.
You have to remember that the real wild card in all of this was that nobody expected that racial block voting analysis in the state would have increased. It came like a bolt out of the blue. It had been 35% in 1990. It had been 35% in 2001. And quite honestly, people who follow this thought that relations, Natives, white relations that you had only gotten better over the past decade. And so when that came from a bolt out of the blue, that kind of threw a curveball into things and made an already difficult problem even more difficult.
The justices took the matter under advisement. A decision in the case could come in about 10 days. By law, a decision is due 60 days before the filing deadline for candidates. The city of Hoonah is feeling pressure from cruise lines and local Native village corporation Hoonah Totem to build a multi-million dollar dock at the corporation's popular Icy Strait Point tourist destination. The Hoonah City Council wants the dock located on city land a quarter mile from the facility, and so far has refused to give in to the company's demands. The state-funded project can't move forward until the dispute is resolved. KTOO's Casey Kelly has more.
Hoonah Totem Corporation approached the city of Hoonah last year with a proposal to partner on a new dock. It would serve cruise ships during the summer and other vessels, such as barges, state ferries, and Coast Guard boats, year-round. Marlene Duvall is Hoonah's city administrator.
With Hoonah Totem, the city added this project to its capital improvements projects list and designated it a community priority.
The project received $17 million in last year's state capital budget, a large amount for the Chichagof Island Village of 750 residents located about 40 air miles west of Juneau. Two sites were identified in the original request, one at Icy Strait Point, a former fish plant turned tourist stop owned by Hoonah Totem, and another called Outer Point or Cannery Point, just north of the facility. Duvall says the city hired P&D engineers to analyze those locations and a third site on city land about 1,000 feet south of Hoonah Totem's property.
If you were to line up a cruise ship, a 1,000-foot cruise ship at each one of these proposed locations, you know, about astern, they would essentially touch each other.
Last September, the Hoonah Council unanimously chose the third site, known as Shaman Point, citing better access for freight vessels. Craig Millen, Senior Vice President for Royal Caribbean Cruises, wrote the city expressing concerns about the location. Millen said if Shaman Point led to increased costs for Royal Caribbean and its customers, the company would continue the current practice of anchoring ships offshore and tendering passengers to Icy Strait Point. Thanks to a deal with Huna Totem, Royal Caribbean and its subsidiary, Celebrity Cruises, account for more than 80% of Huna's ports of call. Millen's letter caught the attention of Scott Ruby, director of the State Division of Community and Regional Affairs, the agency responsible for administering Huna's $17 million grant.
If the cruise industry says they're not going to use it, the majority of the operation and maintenance money for this would come through landing taxes on the cruise industry. So that indicates a problem.
Ruby says the state also has concerns about the two sites backed by Huna Totem and the cruise lines. The engineering analysis showed problems with those locations in terms of dock lifespan and access for other uses.
We're just trying to make sure that whatever gets built is going to be used by the cruise industry and is also available as a multi-use dock.
Last month, two legislators whose districts include Huna, Representative Bill Thomas and Senator Albert Kukesh, went to the community to meet with the city council about the project. The meeting quickly turned contentious, as heard in this exchange between Senator Kukesh and Councilman Chris Erickson.
Just sounds to me like we're having a hammer held over our heads that we either got to do this, or we're not going to have it. And that I disagree with that.
What's the hammer? You think Bill and I are threatening you?
That's my impression, that we're hearing that if we don't go for A or B, that we're not going to have it.
Yes.
Kukesh says he and Thomas did not go to the meeting to pressure the council. He says their only goal was to make sure a dock gets built in Huna.
In the meeting, I said, why don't you guys sit down and talk? Why don't the Huna Totem sit at this end of the table, the city of Huna Council right here, and the cruise ships right there, and you guys decide. I don't care where you build it.
Huna Totem CEO Larry Gaffney declined an on-tape interview, but Icy Strait Point director Johan Dibdahl was at the same meeting as Kukesh and Thomas, where he said the Village Corporation was not allowed to comment during the city council's selection process.
So we had no chance to say anything about this report done by P&D.
On February 28th, Community and Regional Affairs Director Ruby notified the city of the state's decision to put the grant on hold. Duval says Huna Mayor Seferino Villarreal responded a day later that the council's decision was made in the best interests of the public.
The city's decision on location hasn't wavered at all. They're still in agreement, and it's unanimous that Shaman Point is the location for the facility.
Ruby has not responded to the mayor's letter. Huna Totem officials did meet last week with the city's Planning and Zoning Commission, which unanimously backed the city council. Duval says another meeting with the council and the corporation may be scheduled, but she did not know when. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
A former executive of EAC Tech, a subsidiary of the Alaska Native EAC Corporation, is admitting his role in a $20 million government contracting fraud scheme. Harold Babb pleaded guilty in Washington's federal court today to charges of bribery and unlawful kickbacks. Prosecutors say Babb is cooperating with their investigation. Babb was fired by EAC Corporation when the allegations came to light. Babb and three other men were arrested in October and charged with a scheme to submit fraudulent and inflated invoices for government contracting work. Two of the men were employees of the Army Corps of Engineers, and Babb was the director of contracts for EAC Tech, which did business with the government. Prosecutors say the proceeds of the $20 million fraud were spent on personal luxuries, including cars, homes, and high-end watches.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com. ConocoPhillips, the easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
And by
the Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com.
28 new Village Public Safety Officers graduated from the Sitka Training Academy March 9th. That's one of the largest classes in history. As Angela Denning Barnes reports from KYUK in Bethel, students completed 10 weeks of intensive training and testing.
14 of the new VPSOs are from the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. That's the largest regional group of graduates ever. How does that make you feel?
Proud, happy, glad, and full of energy.
Alvin Jimmy oversees dozens of VPSOs as the director of the program in the YK Delta for the Association of Village Council Presidents. He says all 14 of the new VPSOs will be employed in the region, where many communities have suffered in the past with no local law enforcement presence at all.
To build up their morale, that's the key. I know they're getting the training, but it's to build up their morale and their personality.
Jumping into the ocean for the cold water survival, that was one tough job to do.
Cecilia Atchak of Chivac will be a VPSO in her home village. She said she used to be scared of water, but she learned how to swim after 8 weeks at the academy.
You have to be physically and mentally fit for this job.
VPSOs are the first responders to all kinds of events, not just crimes, including accidents and suicides. In training, they learn how to make arrests, how to subdue suspects through words, and if need be, with force. These are skills that graduate Eddie Fenn will use as a VPSO in Chifornik, where he has worked as a tribal police officer and a village police officer the past 4 years.
Try to make you stay focused and give you the tools to be able to overcome fear, overcome the tragedies that you may encounter.
The tough training will help prepare the VPSOs for what's ahead. Jimmy, who used to be a VPSO himself, says the job is full of challenges.
Biggest challenge they face all the time is dealing with their own relatives, their immediate brothers, sisters, some of them their parents, and also another challenging for them is during their work time when they're dealing with fatal incidents and so forth, assisting the troopers. Those sometimes take a key play role in what they're doing.
This year's graduating class tied with a class in 1982 for the second largest in VPSO program history. According to the Alaska State Troopers, class size has fluctuated over the years but has grown steadily since 2008 when only 5 graduated from the academy. In Bethel, I'm Angela Denning Barnes.
Lower Kuskokwim School District buildings in Bethel have had trouble with an outdated water and sewer system all winter. January saw the coldest average temperature on record and left many pipes frozen. But a new bill in the legislature may help the district get a new system quicker than expected. Mark Earhart from KYUK in Bethel files this story.
This past December and January, it was really cold in Bethel. Temperatures dipped down near the negative 40s, and pipes started to freeze across town, including pipes in many Lower Kuskokwim School District buildings. This caused a slew of problems for LKSD and parents and students. The freeze got so bad that winter break had to be extended as maintenance crews spent weeks trying to thaw out the pipes. State Representative Bob Herron outlined the steps lawmakers in Juneau are taking to fix the problem.
The issue, of course, is trying to get capital project funding for the Lower Kuskokwim's Bethel School Complex water and sewer lines that were damaged, of course, during the cold weather.
Governor Sean Parnell has budgeted nearly $6 million to fix LKSD's ailing water and sewer system in his budget for the next fiscal year, meaning the system would not be replaced until at least 2013. But Herron says a fast-track supplemental bill could get the pipes fixed much sooner.
There is a process within the legislature that the legislature can authorize appropriation for unexpected expenses that are picked up during this current fiscal year, which, of course, is July 1, 2011 to June 30, 2012.
Herron says both the House and the Senate are considering the issue, and if passed, it would go to the governor's desk.
We're confident because everybody's agreed that that capital project is important and it is, quote unquote, an emergency, and we can get a year up on construction, that it will pass the legislature within the next couple of weeks.
Getting a year up on construction is an important factor. The fast-track funding would put the materials on the barge this year instead of next. This would mean the school district could feel confident letting students run water when the temperatures dip into the negative digits next winter. In Bethel, I'm Mark Earhart.
A team from the University of Alaska Fairbanks won first place at the 13th annual Clean Snowmobile Challenge last week in Houghton, Michigan. Students from the U.S. and Canada re-engineer stock snow machines for improved fuel economy, cleaner emissions, and noise reduction. KUAC's Emily Schwing reports.
That's the sound of a typical cross-country snow machine. And that's the sound of a snow machine that a team of University of Alaska Fairbanks students re-engineered to reduce its noise level. It's all part of the annual Clean Snowmobile Challenge, hosted by the Society for Automotive Engineers at Michigan Technology University. UAF graduate student Michael Golub has taken at least one retooled snow machine to the competition for the past 3 years.
Usually about 17 to 20 schools that take part. There's two categories. Either you have a sled that runs on regular gasoline, or electric.
This year, 12 teams competed in the internal combustion category. Snow machines entered in that competition must travel at least 100 miles without refueling at 45 miles per hour or more. Snow machines also competed in a zero emissions category. Judges evaluated the snow machines on fuel economy, noise reduction, handling, endurance, and overall design. Golub says his team was most interested in entering the zero emissions competition.
The electric sled, you can actually just gut the whole thing out and kind of rebuild it from scratch. There's not much left of the original sled except for the stuff that you can see, basically the track, the skid frame, and the body.
Golub says in Alaska, electric snow machines could be useful for things other than science.
We believe that an electric snowmobile is something that should be accessible to people that just drive these things in the rural areas or people that just do it on a weekend basis.
Last year, Golub's team won fourth place overall. In Fairbanks, I'm Emily Schwing.
And finally this evening, we have a correction. Last night, in a story about the efforts to reinstate a coastal management program in Alaska, we mistakenly referred to a program section change in 2003 as having taken the Department of Economic Development out of the process for coastal management activities. The correct department that was affected was the Department of Environmental Conservation, not Economic Development. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Tara Bicknell in Haines, Casey Kelly in Juneau, Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage, Angela Denning Barnes and Mark Earhart in Bethel, and Emily Schwing in Fairbanks. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau and Ann Hillman from Nome. Our editor and producer is Andy Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for nearly 60 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. CrowleyAlaska.com. The State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2012 PFD. Also, paper applications are located in your community. More information at pfd.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska. Timing is everything. A mother who waits until her child is at least 2 years old before becoming pregnant again has a better chance of regaining strength and energy between pregnancies. Her baby is more likely to be born on time and at a good weight. So talk to your health care provider to find out how to plan your pregnancies and ask for the state's free birth spacing booklet. Take the time to build a strong and healthy family. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.